When my mom talked about menopause, she called it the change, and it was all very hush-hush, as if there was something wrong about something so natural. Thank goodness with mental health awareness and actual research, we're beginning to understand the huge role hormones play in women's bodies. Being postmenopausal has its challenges, but if you're going through either perimenopause or menopause, then I suggest you try Hormone Harmony. Why? Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now here's the beauty about them. They help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. This is SELFWORK, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At SELFWORK, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. The other thing you miss out on if you blame are healthy relationships. You're not going to have healthy relationships. You'll scare off fairly healthy people because they know that you'll soon blame them, just like you're blaming your ex-spouse or your ex-boss, your ex-friend, or your ex-anything. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. Do you know anyone who seems to have a chip on their shoulder? And what exactly does that mean? This idea seems to be of American origin and derives from a custom once common to bars. A man who felt like a fight put a wood chip on his shoulder and defied anyone to knock it off. The challenge was rarely refused. I also found it described as a boys' game, so who knows, maybe the boys learned it from the men. But what does it mean now? It means you feel as if you've been treated unfairly, not given a fair shake. You didn't get the chance that you deserve. And it's also tied in with the idea of whatever happened or didn't happen being the cause of why your life is going as badly as it may be going. You got a chip on your shoulder. Sadly, what this leads to is you viewing life as if you're a victim and justifying being angry because of it. After all, didn't the whole chip game grow from someone looking for a fight? And adopting a victim identity means you get to blame and blame a lot. That's what we're going to talk about today on Self-Work, blame. Our listener email for today is from someone who listened to the recent podcast on grieving a parent and wants to tell me how it affected her, so much so that she's acting on the ideas within the episode. I'll share more in detail later. I love it, however, when listeners try out the what you can do about it suggestions that we talk about all the time here at Self-Work. First, let's hear from BetterHelp. The most common problem I hear from those seeking therapy is how hard it is to find a therapist, how long it takes, how vulnerable you feel asking around for names. BetterHelp solves those problems. After you make the first contact, their standard is to offer names of therapists to you in less than 2 days, and you can talk to them in a first session to see if it's a good fit. If so, you're on your way. But if not, rather than going through something awkward, you simply let BetterHelp know and they'll ask what it was you didn't like and find someone else for you. You can text, chat, or talk virtually. All of those avenues are open to you. I'm a therapist because I got good therapy. I'd had no idea how much I could benefit from it, but I knew I wasn't seeing myself or my world clearly. Here's BetterHelp's offer for Self-Work listeners. 10% off your first month of sessions if you use this link, betterhelp.com/self-work. They say the best time to plant a tree is 30 years ago, but the next best is today. It's never too late to reach out and get help. BetterHelp.com/self-work. There There are days I know that I wake up on the wrong side of the bed. I don't feel well. I don't sleep well. I may be frustrated by some kind of disappointment or conflict. I've had things seemingly fall apart that I've been working really hard on or was excited about. That kind of thing happens to all of us all the time. Or maybe we're going through a bigger problem, true grief, the loss of a loved one, the tragedy of a natural disaster hitting our town. An unwanted divorce, a diagnosis of illness, or a sudden medical emergency. On those mornings, we all have to make a decision. Am I going to let whatever that disappointment is sabotage my day or not? Or if the burden is heavier, am I going to shift my sadness or my fear into anger, an emotion that may be easier to feel? And am I going to allow that anger to fester and cause me to treat others badly? It's in those decisive moments that I think we all make a call. Am I going to look for blame? Who did this to me? Who's at fault? Why is this happening to me? That's not fair. Or am I going to acknowledge that whatever I'm going through, a bad day or truly devastating human experience, is very hard? That's acknowledgement. It's just hard. And make a decision to move away from blame. There are people who spend most of their lives blaming others for whatever has gone wrong in their lives and take no part in the responsibility for them. Cluster B, personality disorders, which are personality disorders where emotional volatility is part of the picture. That's borderline, narcissistic, histrionic, or antisocial. Those personality disorders have at their core a sense of victimhood, blame, superiority, anger, whatever. But you don't have to have a personality disorder to hang on to blame and spend a lot of your time blaming others for who you are or who you aren't. You could also be someone who isn't mature enough or wise enough, was never even taught, that taking responsibility for yourself is a part of emotional maturity. When couples come into therapy with me, I tell many of them after our time together is up for the first session, I want to commend you for one thing. As much pain as I've heard in this room today, I've also got two people in the room who are taking responsibility for their part of what's wrong. And that is huge. I think it's more than half of the work, taking responsibility, acknowledging your own role in both the success of your partnership and the problems within it. They usually smile, happy to hear something good about themselves. And I'm not kidding. It is half the work. There are certainly other couples who are looking for me to judge which one of them is right, which one wrong, and somehow prove to the one who's wrong how irrational or lazy or controlling they are. I may see one or more of those exact things, but can also see the other side of the dynamic. Now, that doesn't mean the problems are always split 50-50 between two people. Sometimes one partner is less rational or doesn't take responsibility or is even being abusive. But what happens when someone can't see their role in a problem or won't? Let's think about that for a minute. The person who won't take responsibility grabs a lot of power. The person who blames or sees themselves as somehow better than, healthier than, blameless, grabs power because they thus refuse to be a part of making things better. Others need to change. Others have issues. This can happen at work or at home, with neighbors or with any group, a team, a club, whatever. The one refusing to look at themselves and their role assumes no guilt, no responsibility, and can literally stop conversations cold, refusing to cooperate, or blow up in anger or rage that it's even being suggested that they are part of the problem. Now, if you're listening to this and wondering whether you do this, you probably don't. Because you wouldn't be wondering at all if you were like this. You might even tell yourself that this episode has nothing to do with you. So again, if you're wondering whether you do this, you likely don't. As I was doing my research for this episode, I found an article out of a clinic in London, Harley Therapy. So if anybody from Harley Therapy is listening, I'm featuring you today. It's about why we put the blame on others, and I thought the author made some great points, as well as organizing the article in three parts: how blame protects, how the habit of blaming reduces you, and, you know, this is my key phrase, what you can do about it. I'll go over their list and offer my thoughts as well. The link to the article is in the show notes if you'd like to read the original. So let's take a moment to talk about how blame might seem to protect you. First, blaming others is easy. When you let yourself off the hook, you don't have to do the much harder internal work of figuring out and taking responsibility for how you may have hurt someone else, how you may have been disappointing, whatever it is. I'll give you an example. I had a surgery several years ago, rotator cuff surgery to be exact. I faithfully did all my exercises every day, never missed a physical therapy appointment, but I also never got full use of my shoulder back, and there's still to this day a lot of pain. The doctor blamed me when I tried to talk to him about it. It was far easier for him to do that than to look more carefully at himself. I'm sure many of you have had similar experiences. It's refreshing to find someone who'll say, you know, I don't know how that happened. It might have been something on my end, but we're going to find out, or something to that effect. I've been mad about all this, actually, but I also temper it with, he was my choice. I should have asked others who knew more. That's my responsibility. So I hope you can hear how it might feel good sometimes to get mad, but I also don't like carrying around anger. So I acknowledge I don't protect myself, or I haven't been protecting myself. Here's number two. Blame means you don't have to be accountable nor vulnerable. Now, I don't know if the doc I mentioned a couple of minutes ago thought I was going to sue, which never occurred to me, by the way. And I can see how that's scary for anyone in the medical profession. But he refused accountability. Now, it's hard to do that. You can fear the results of being accountable. But so much of the time when you are, you'll actually get understanding back. But when you're someone who blames, you probably believe others will also be quick to blame. And when I thought about that, I thought, gosh, that can become its own prison. That thought actually gave me a lot more empathy for people who do blame, because they probably fear everyone else does the same thing. And so they're being what they think is protective. The author's third point was, blaming others feeds your need for control. You think, I'm superior. Now, here's that narcissism that we mentioned a while ago. Certainly a huge component of narcissism is needing to be in control of relationships, being very grandiose at times, feeling like you're doing other people a favor by being involved with them, needing a constant rotation of people admiring you. And when you fear someone else might be actually leaving your aura, you can get quite flattering and come in with a lot of what's called love bombing. But that blaming others feeds your need for control. Because often a narcissist will actually attract someone who takes a lot of responsibility and who will accept blame far too easily. This fourth point was very interesting. Blame unloads backed up feelings, especially anger and a need for control. So where does that come from? This was an interesting point for sure. The author's point, I think, is that when you've got pent up or unexpressed anger, when you feel out of control, that blaming someone or something gives you a reason or an excuse to just lose it on someone else. To blame and to even shame someone else, and you're unloading these backed up feelings. I liked that point. It made sense to me. I would not have thought of that. Number five is blame protects your ego. Now, this does not mean that blame is a skill. It's a skill to claim your mistakes, and that takes both strength and integrity. No, what the author means there is that blame is protective of your ego. It's protective of your need to feel right, which is a weakness. Real ego strength doesn't have to be right. Let me repeat that. Real ego strength doesn't have to be right. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. As a psychologist, I've talked to many people with OCD about their experiences. The idea that OCD is only about hand washing and organization is a misconception. OCD is a severe and very common condition. OCD can latch onto anything, but it often focuses on the things we care about most. In an attempt to make the distress from their unwanted thoughts go away, people with OCD will often engage in repetitive physical or mental behaviors known as compulsions, which can be incredibly time-consuming and exhausting. Yet OCD is highly treatable, but it needs specialized treatment. NoCD is a virtual therapy provider for OCD that makes getting specialized therapy easier than ever. With NoCD, you can do live, face-to-face video therapy with licensed therapists who specialize in OCD. Therapists receive in-depth specialized training in exposure and response prevention, or ERP, a type of therapy that was designed specifically to treat OCD. NoCD accepts many major insurance plans and offers always-on support between sessions. If you think you might be struggling with OCD and want to learn more about therapy with NoCD, go to NoCD.com and schedule a free 15-minute call with their team. That's NoCD.com to learn more and book a free 15-minute call. Now the article goes on. So when you blame, what are you losing out on? The first point, you don't get a chance to grow because you're always defending. So blamers stay very emotionally immature. You can see this when kids start moving out of their teenage years and into their 20s when they can be more objective about themselves. You can see this emotional growth, this emotional maturity. Oh, wait a minute. I see how I am involved here. I see how I saw this wrong, or I can see my own responsibility. That's when you know your teenager is becoming more emotionally mature and growing as a person, and they're stopping all the defending. You're also losing out on your power, this author says, because you're always saying you're a victim. Taking the stance that you're a victim means saying that you have very little to no power. Isn't that ironic? When instead you acknowledge your reality, maybe you are or were the victim of harassment or abuse, if that's actually true, and you have been a victim, but trying to look for what you do have control over can give you a sense of empowerment. Now, of course, there are instances where you weren't a victim, although you say you were, and that's a more obvious case, I think, of giving away your power. But there have been many books and movies about people who have been truly victimized, and they find what they can control. They find what they have power over. Very inspiring stories. You also lose out on your empathy because you avoid accountability. So you don't grow the skill of empathy because you don't negotiate. Things aren't your fault. Empathy involves maturity as well, where you have empathy for others and how they might have heard a statement you made or whatever, and you have empathy. Again, none of the cluster B personality disorders, borderline, narcissistic, histrionic, and antisocial, they have a true lack of empathy, which is hard to understand. Doesn't she or he or they know how they're affecting me? Don't they know? Can't they tell how miserable I am when I'm trying to be with them? No, they can't. At least they can't without getting a lot of therapy. The other thing you miss out on if you blame are healthy relationships. You're not going to have healthy relationships. You'll scare off fairly healthy people because they know that you'll soon blame them. Just like you're blaming your ex-spouse or your ex-boss, your ex-friend or your ex-anything. They hear you blame and they go, whoops, that'll be coming my way. So they stay away. And you're losing out on your positive influence. Blame is contagious. Your children will pick up your habit of blaming. Others around you will be negatively affected by such a victimized stance. And of course, there's this. When you've been the victim, when you feel that you have lost out, you're more likely to want to hurt others to get back at them, to regain power. So it adds such negativity and pain to your relationships because it's always a jockeying for power. So here's my favorite part of this article. What are you going to do about it? What the author says is stop repeating the story. Now, what does that mean? The story is what you repeat over and over again in your mind or even in your conversation. So your self-talk or your real talking about what happened. And the story will only tell the part or repeat the part where you feel something bad or unfair happened to you. Let's go back to those couples I was talking about. When I see a couple who both blame the other, it's as if I'm hearing two different descriptions of the same relationship. Sometimes I see both people as individuals just once, and then I get them together, and this happens. But I'll also tell you it can happen when they're both simultaneously in the same room. It's really weird. There'll be constant disagreement about what happened, what was said, when it happened, when it was said, how it happened, how it was said. There's no agreement. Now, with a couple who does take responsibility for themselves, I hear basically the same story. Two perspectives, maybe. But each of their perspectives is at least respected or tolerated. And actually, I'll tell both kinds of couples about what I see. Either you both are describing your problems similarly, and that's good, or it's as if I'm hearing a totally different story from both of you. And blame is often the huge problem there. So repeating your story over and over again only solidifies it in your mind. What would someone else's story be? Write it down. Tell yourself. Ask other people. Hey, you and I went to that same party. I felt like everybody left me out. What was your sense? Ask somebody else what their perspective was. Don't just repeat your own perspective over and over and over. Number two is work on your own self-worth. Your ego has to be secure to accept your share of responsibility. This is a great suggestion, but just how do you, quote unquote, work on your self-worth? Here's a couple of ideas. First, ask those you trust to tell you one thing that they admire about you, what they appreciate about you. If you can't give a sense of worth to yourself, begin by building a picture of yourself as others see you. Maybe they think you're funny. Maybe they think you're smart. Maybe they think that you've really lived through a very hard time. I don't know, but you have to ask. Number two, begin doing something that helps other people. I cannot say this strongly enough. Get out of your own victim mentality and go help someone else whose life is far worse than yours. It offers you perspective, and you need perspective, and it will build your inner sense of worth. I made today about somebody else other than me. And here's number three. Work on lightening up a little bit, laughing more, not taking yourself so seriously. If you look for reasons that you should blame, if you look for reasons to stay angry, you'll find them. So look instead for reasons not to blame. Ask yourself, what am I not wanting to admit to myself that I'm doing wrong or something that I could do better? And where did I learn to do this blaming? Where did I learn to do this? And if it was my parent, how did it feel for them to blame me? Probably not very good. So you want to acknowledge again that there was someone in your life, very likely, that demonstrated blame or superiority to you. And here's, now I added this one, okay? Learn to acknowledge. Practice it. What is acknowledgement in the first place? It's when you see the entire picture and how things relate to one another. I'll take my shoulder surgery, for example. As I said, I could stay in blame and on bad, feel sorry for myself days when my shoulder hurts. I can far too easily go there. I have to admit that. But if I acknowledge that I rushed into the decision and didn't do my own homework about potential surgeons, I have to acknowledge that and take my share of the responsibility. And guess what? I calm down. You have to practice this. It doesn't mean believing that everything is your fault. It's not. But usually, you have a role to play. Not always, but usually. And it takes emotional maturity to claim that role. Good luck to you. Here's the listener email for this week. I just listened to your podcast about grieving a parent's death. Lots of things were going through my mind while listening. My mother lost her mother when she was 16 years old due to complications from a car accident. There were 11 kids in the family, and she was one of the middle children. So I thought a lot about what my mom must have gone through. I feel cheated that I never got to meet my grandma. She sounded like such a nice person. I also lost a sister due to an unexpected health issue. She was 26 and left 3 kids. The father fell apart, and both sets of grandparents raised those 3 kids. My mom lived through losing her mom again and didn't want the kids split up or raised by strangers. I also lost another sister 16 years ago because of drunk driving. Both sisters were younger than me, and as I get older, I miss them more. They were closest in age to me, and I think about what all of us would be doing now, and we'll never know. So I'm emailing you to let you know that listening to your podcast helped me today. I'm thinking of writing letters to all of them, parents, sisters, and a grandma I never got to meet, as you suggested. Also, I'm not very close to my niece, and I was thinking of suggesting to her the same idea, to write her mom. So I'm going to reach out to her. I know you're busy with all you do. Thank you for all you do. I appreciate it. You truly make a difference and have for me, and I'm sure so many others. First of all, thank you for those very kind words. The self-work audience, all of you, mean a lot to me. And I'm thrilled at the idea of writing a letter to someone you wish you'd known and believe you missed something special by not knowing them. I have a grandfather like that. Or someone you did love that died. And that you're going to try to write them letters. As I said in the episode, we absorb things about people who love us and can so benefit from writing to them and even having them write you back. Obviously, that's you writing and they're deceased, so you're not going to get anything back. But you also realize what you have absorbed, and it's amazing how that can feel. Or if you're uncomfortable with journaling, then take a walk or go for a drive and just talk to them. It can be emotional, but you can feel an emotional connection when you structure things that way, as you remember what they would have said or wanted to let you know. And of course, what you want to write to them is also very meaningful. Thank you so much for sending in your email. I want to close today by talking about an email I got from a listener about last week's episode about ketamine. She'd been confused and alarmed that from her first listening to it, she thought we were recommending that people use drugs without caution. What I hope you got from the episode on ketamine was that actually using those drugs without intervention or without being in a clinical setting can be dangerous. We got straight with one another, which was really good, because I wanted to know, what did I say that inferred that? I was confused. But she said she listened again and realized that some of her own fear about drug use, which comes from her personal experience, was at play as she listened. So I hope that episode was meaningful for all of you. Please send me in ideas for topics. I often get my topics from what my own patients are talking to me about or what I read on the internet or see in social media, but I'd love to hear from you. After all, you're the ones listening. You can do that by email at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com or on the SpeakPipe function, which is a voicemail. You can also subscribe to drmargaretrutherford.com right on my website. That will give you a free ebook, which I think is a pretty cool little new ebook that's available now, talking about how you can understand your own defensive mechanisms like blaming. And then, of course, you get a weekly newsletter with my podcast for the week, my blog post for the week, and just bits and pieces about news that I think you might be interested in. That, again, is drmargaretrutherford.com. And join my Facebook group. It's facebook.com/groups/selfwork. You can ask me a question, but can also benefit from the support and wisdom from the nearly 4,000 strong group from all over the world. We'd welcome you. Thank you again, as always, for being here. Please keep the victims of the hurricanes in the southeastern part of the United States, the fires in the northwestern part of the United States, in your thoughts and prayers, and give what you can to helping organizations. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.